What's the deal with this?
Deal? What are you saying?
Deal.
Deal?
I don't see what the big deal is, you know? It's not that great.
Good deal. You won't regret it.
What's the deal, son? What do you have going?
All right, look, here's the deal.
What do you say we're making some deal?
While the impact of proximity might be intuitive, home prices are not just driven by having nearby grocery stores. Rather, they are driven by access to the right quantity, mix, and quality of community features. And home buyers are being presented with a myriad of opportunities to customize their search for the perfect home. Today on the show, I'm speaking with Brian McAllister, CEO of Local Life. Local Life is a data-driven online personalized property search tailored to how you live your life. This episode is brought to you by InCheck by Site Comply. InCheck is a building operations platform used by thousands of property management teams to get visibility, accountability, and consistency and grow their portfolios and profits. To find out more, go to incheckapp.com. That's INCHECKAPP.com. I'm your host, managing partner at Founders Grove Capital, a multifamily value-add investment firm. Real Estate Innovators is a podcast that explores innovation in commercial real estate. We celebrate the companies and innovators who are changing the business of commercial real estate and are inspiring the future of how we work, live, and play. I asked Brian to talk about his background and the unique insight that led him to founding Local Life.
After grad school, I somehow managed to end up in Hong Kong. I was doing wine marketing and sales there, a small food and beverage distributor. And I was actually hired as the person to manage that very small group because I was from California and they assumed I knew a lot about California wine. So I went over there, and prior to getting over there, my experience with California wines or with wine in general was really things like Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill. So an accelerated period going around and going to as many wineries as possible before I went to Hong Kong. I kind of had an in on the job, but I had to go there and meet with folks. So it was my first experience at having to cram for a job and a job interview. Got there, but I managed to pass the test, I guess, and could speak at least somewhat knowledgeably about wines. I did that for a couple of years. Great job. You can imagine a lot of fun living in Hong Kong. And then for some reason, I sometimes scratch my head. I decided to go to law school different lifestyle entirely. Spent 10 years after that practicing corporate law for big law firms in Los Angeles, Hong Kong, and finally Palo Alto, where I mostly worked with tech companies, big ones, small ones. My time in Palo Alto straddled the bursting of the tech bubble in 2001. So as you can imagine, it was a fascinating, instructive, and quite painful time to be in the Silicon Valley. You're watching companies with interesting but faulty business models rise meteorically and then come crashing down seemingly almost overnight. Clients, one day they're there, and the next day there's a lock on the door of the office they were leasing, and they've just disappeared. And this was going on. It was just, widespread. In 2004, I left law firm life and went in-house to CBRE, which at the time was one of the larger global real estate services firms. CBRE, at the time, it was just called CB Richard Ellis, but CBRE had mostly commercial business in the U.S. and then, some residential overseas, as well as mostly commercial. And their business was primarily real estate services, you think brokerage, mortgage, the like, investment management, and global corporate outsourcing, which was a small part of the business at the time, the corporate outsourcing. Most of my time, or at least a lot of my time there, particularly later years of my legal department time, was spent on brokerage and property management, mergers and acquisitions. So we'd go out, we'd buy a smaller brokerage company or property management company and, fold them into CBRE. And then I was doing that along with some of the company's larger inbound licensing deals and managing IP. Over time, as a new management team came in, we did this merger with Trammell Crow, and their management team became a big part of our management team. The company, through that process, became much more self-aware of its data and technology gaps. And this is about the same time as all the large players were becoming self-aware about these issues. So at CBRE, we started to focus more of our efforts there. You know, how do we figure out what technology we have? How do we enhance that technology? How do we add to our DNA to bring people in who can help us at the time, develop a better data and technology platform? In 2013, I actually left legal and moved into CBRE's corporate development group. I was spending, at that point, a large portion of my time on M&A. So, you know, I just figured go over and spend 100%. And instead of doing the legal, I would help source, and then drive negotiations on the deals. I managed corporate development for Asia Pacific. And in the U.S., my time was increasingly focused on deals where data and or technology was a key component. And that's what I'd say is the move that led directly to where I'm at today. During this time, this is, you know, think from 2010, 11, 12 on, the large real estate services firms realized they had a lot of data. They were just sitting on mountains of data, had no idea how to get their arms around it. So there was a process internally where we were all trying to learn about how to manage or how to pull the data and manage it, organize it, what resources did we need, and then also trying to figure out, okay, technology is moving ahead very quickly, mostly because of a bunch of scrappy startups that were out there. This is the early days in commercial real estate tech. So there was kind of a self-education process going on within the firm. And then we were buying companies, like I remember buying a company in real estate site selection. It was basically a data company doing predictive analytics, helping service providers advise their clients better on, you know, where to locate the next, you know, retail operation or where to pull out or, you know, how might you change that property. And it just made me much more aware that data, As much as the shiny tech tools, data itself was really driving a lot of the changes in real estate. It was happening in residential as well as commercial. So I started kind of thinking about things I might do with that. And then fortunately, a lot of it was commercial, and I was at a commercial real estate services firm. So in 2016, I stepped away and I had a handful of ideas that I was working on. I spent the rest of the year kind of working through those and really came upon the local life idea and built out the model, developed the algorithms, and, you know, the rest is history.
Big data is extremely large sets of data that may be analyzed computationally to reveal patterns, trends, and associations, especially relating to human behavior and interactions. I asked Brian to address the challenges with delivering insights from big data.
The data itself, there's no shortage of data. It's actually being able to capture the right data and then build that into a tool that delivers something that's meaningful. And ultimately, if you're in commercial real estate where I was, it's what is going to be meaningful for the client that the people who bring in the bacon every day, the brokers, right, the consultants, that they could then have packaged in a tool where they could then deliver something that's meaningful to those clients. And that data was coming from everywhere. The hardest part was getting it out of the platform itself, the platform you were sitting on, because it hadn't been built to be gathered. It was unstructured. It was sitting in various silos. And so I think most of the large players have gotten their arms around this, but initially the hardest part, the biggest piece, was figuring out what you had if you were at one of these firms and how to get to it in a way that's efficient. And that might sound, if you're in the data industry, you might say, oh, well, okay, we've got lots of tools for that. But if you're starting off with a firm that's got, let's just say, just in the era of computers, you know, 20 or 30 years worth of data sitting there. Some of it's probably still on tapes. You know, how do you get to it? So those were some of the struggles that I observed. And then what I thought was really interesting was what a lot of the, I call them scrappy startups, but the startups were doing and trying to build tools for the commercial real estate services firms, which were things like, okay, you're representing landlords. They've got all this data. You're basically advising them based on spreadsheets that kind of tell someone about their stack and how it's performing and what the turnover looks like. There are much, I mean, you look at VTS and Hightower, kind of their tools were all about pulling a lot of data that's being delivered through spreadsheets and putting it into great platforms that service providers, that your consultants could use, or your brokers could use to advise their landlord clients. So that's a you know, perfect segue from how do you take all this data that you're sitting on and that you're getting from your client that you have, and how do you package it into something meaningful so that you can keep that client and continue to have a revenue stream from them and maybe enhance that revenue stream.
I asked Brian about how LocalLife set out to solve the challenges of big data and to explain LocalLife's value proposition.
Along the way, particularly that time that I took off after I left CBRE, I was kind of looking at how data was transforming what agents were doing for their clients. And if you think about it, what you were getting was the companies putting in the hands of their brokers, their agents, tools that allowed them to refine the service of their clients through greater customization around that client. It was basically customization at the end of the day that started kind of jumping out at me. And that's really where I started focusing on, okay, so how can you deliver tools that somehow narrow the funnel around a particular client from a service provider perspective? And I started thinking about real estate search. Oddly ended up in residential real estate search, even though I started in commercial real estate. If you look at search itself in residential real estate, the current version of it really came in around 2005-ish some time frame. And this is when Zillow and Trulia came on the scene. Prior to that, search was difficult. It was, for the online version, it was mostly only available through MLS sites that offered consumer access, and that wasn't all of them, it was only some. And then through agents, and then often you were getting print materials for real estate search. It was a closed world. So Zillow, Trulia, and others that followed had a massive impact in bringing information to the light of day. Now, for the first time, consumers can access all the listing info about properties for sale. Then they get additional data that the listing sites started to incorporate, or where agents would add additional data to their listings directly through those platforms. So Zillow and Trulia were truly B2C at the start. It was a kind of a sea change and incredibly popular with consumers. You can, you know, see it in business models today. They became very successful. And because they were generating so much traffic, you know, think lead generation, agents had to get on board. And the rest is history. Along the way, a lot has changed, including their business models. But their approach to search has largely remained the same. So they've got better features and graphics. Mapping and data has exploded. Agents have to pay a lot more to really get the most out of those platforms. And the search field is busy on both the sale and rental side with lots of sites out there doing this. But the general approach is the same. You've got 45 million people moving a year, 18 to 19 million households, that's every year. And each of them are basically treated generically, the same as each other, with little distinction between the mom with three kids, the young professional just out of college, or empty nesters whose kids are now off to college. So despite all that data we have at our fingertips, you and I would be treated the same in our search. The only difference really is price range and property features and maybe some point of interest data, like are there restaurants nearby? This results in buyers and renters sifting through hundreds of listings when they go through a search process. They jump from site to site to find relevant data about cities and neighborhoods. And it's basically a process where you spin your wheels and you know it's painful. We've all done it. And you know, a high percentage of the properties we look at you know, whether you're online or going to visit places, they're poor matches. So that means out of all these people searching every year, hundreds of millions of hours are spent on real estate search. And a high proportion of that is wasted time. And that's just for consumers. You also have to look at the impact on agents and property managers. So along the way, property search, you know, 2005 time, it was great, just exploded on the scene. We all loved it. We've loved it for years. But today it's a commodity. And it's broken because we're not using data in a way to make it better and faster and more efficient. And that's really kind of where I came to after, you know, my time at CBRE and spending some time thinking about it was data should be about customizing results, always should be about customizing results. The more data you have, the more you should be able to get better results. But we're really not doing that in terms of the search funnel. You know, you go to a traditional listing site today, it's still, you know, I can give you lots of details around the property itself. I can narrow that funnel around the property itself, but the property is in an area, and the areas you live in drive more of the happiness you're going to get from where you live than just the house itself, because houses can be remodeled. A neighborhood cannot.
I asked Brian how Local Life uses big data to customize search for homebuyers.
So what we do is we apply basically proprietary scoring algorithms to hyperlocal data and user inputs, and we create personalized home and neighborhood recommendations for buyers and renters. Key differentiators for us are personalization, individualization of product, and delivery scale. We look at a user's stage of life and what they prioritize in the community around them to create a ranked list of properties and neighborhoods based on their criteria. Essentially, it's tailored to how they live or want to live their life. We don't just want to know what kind of building you want to live in. We want to know what's unique about you that should influence the kinds of properties and neighborhoods you look at. And we do this without a lot of, you know, personal data. It's basically trying to get to your lifestyle and certain priorities. And then we layer that on top of geography and all the building features and price range and things that we're all used to filling in on listing sites.
Every major metro has an insider's take on neighborhoods and the experience residents can expect to have while living there. I scanned many a blog post while looking for apartments in San Francisco many years ago to determine the difference between Noe Valley and Russian Hill. I asked Brian about Local Life's unique ability to provide these types of data-driven insights.
Every metro has people doing things like that, which is kind of cool. You know, everyone has different opinions, but you know, you can go to Quora and Reddit and find different takes as well. There's no reason why this can't be kind of more centralized. Right now, you think about all the, when you're, let's just say you're moving to, you know, a new market, or you're moving across a market, you're not going to know that much about, let's say if you're in San Jose and you're moving up to Albany or Berkeley, you're just not going to know that much about the neighborhoods there. So how many websites do you have to go to get enough information to feel like you know where to look? And, you know, it's probably more than you'll count on one hand. The key thing is it's critical to look at all the right data too. So typical data sets used by listing sites, you know, and data aggregators today include things like crime and schools and point of interest. And when I say point of interest, I mean shopping, restaurants, parks, churches, you know, schools, kind of the locational data. And all that's good, and we use that too. But we think that should just be a part of the data pie. So we dig into hyperlocal factors that contribute to what we perceive are engaged communities that are fun to live in. And we look at things like electoral and government participation, activities for people in the community on weekends and evenings, volunteer opportunities, things to do for kids and adults. Think, you know, sports leagues and performance opportunities, pollution, nuisances, mobility, culture, balance, both demographic and economic, a range of others. The result is more effective property search because you're getting a picture of the community now that goes just beyond the hot button items like, you know, crime and are the schools strong. And actually, for a lot of people, you know, they don't care about the schools. I'm an empty nester now. Our next home, I could care less about the schools. They may be strong just based on the price range that I'm in, or they may not. But we all have different factors that we care about.
I asked Brian about the launch of Local Life and the markets in which Local Life is active.
We launched on February 4th. It's a consumer light version. It's basically getting it out there. It's having people test it, figuring out what's broken, fixing it, as I mentioned. We're in the Dallas-Fort Worth market to start. It's a good, even though I live in the Bay Area, Dallas-Fort Worth is a really good two-sided market for the most part. You've got buyers, you've got sellers, renters. It's got urban, suburban sprawl, and a tool like Localife is, you know, great for markets like that. It really helps buyers and renters start with the big part of the funnel, which is, okay, what's the right neighborhood in what cities I should be looking at? And then are there properties in those and which ones should I be looking at?
I asked Brian how users are engaging with Localife and what type of feedback they're getting from customers.
We're building traffic over time. You know, we're starting from a dead zero, so our growth is infinite. But we're getting good feedback. People are enjoying in particular the neighborhood piece, because the neighborhood piece is maybe the hardest one to find in terms of being able to get back kind of a, you know, when you go to our platform, what you get back is a map like you'd see on a listing site with pins all over it. But then you've got a list of properties and a list of neighborhoods, and they're literally ranked top to bottom based on our criteria and what you've told us about you. So you could just start clicking through, like in Dallas-Fort Worth, there's over 1,100 neighborhoods. Your search might return back, you know, something that lists out 100, but maybe only 50 of those have, or 40 of those have properties in them. And you may only want to look at the top 20, because you start getting down to the bottom, it's less of a match. So we're not cutting off the data. We're simply saying you can start at the top, go down as far as you want, but you don't have to go down that far to find the neighborhoods you're going to end up wanting to go visit and kind of really checking out and making sure you want to see those areas or maybe live in those areas. Our view is you should never go someplace that isn't a good match in the first place. So if we start you off with a good match, the idea that you would be going out someplace going, oh, this is stupid, why am I here? That shouldn't happen. Same with properties.
I asked Brian what success looks like for Localife in 2019.
I think in 2019, you know, for now, it's all about just continuing to enhance the platform. We have some features we want to add for consumers. But our next step really is developing a tool for agents. That's our revenue model, which is, you know, how do we take this thing we built and layer onto it a tool that we can generate income from? We think what we've built, the data architecture and the scoring algorithms themselves are what we view as kind of the heart of our system. And everything else is just through an API we can layer on as additional tools. For agents, we're developing a product. We've got the kind of the development model in place, but essentially what it should do is improve client onboarding through a white label data building interface. So the data that we're collecting now around users, imagine an agent has that as a tool to use with their clients or send them a link, they fill it out. But there's a little more, goes into a little more depth. The agent can now build this profile around the client and have a better view as to, instead of driving around and touring them through neighborhoods, they can basically start them right now with the funnel and say, okay, we're going to go out this weekend. Here's the neighborhoods I want you to see. Here's the properties I want you to see. The idea is at the very front, instead of having them go through cold discovery, they've already got a lot of the discovery done. The tool itself applies client analytics. So the agent is sharing this tool with the client. They actually know where the client's spending time, the searches they save, what they favorite, where they basically have deleted things. It's giving them enough analytics to accelerate search. You accelerate search, you improve agent productivity. So if I'm an agent and I'm going to spend, you know, X time with a client on the buy side, and buy side representation can be very painful for agents. You've got clients who don't really know what they want, they change their minds, and they often use additional agents in the geography. So it's not just you don't have an exclusive like you do on the sales side with a client until you make an offer, and it's only on that property. So if you can get better analytics to accelerate search and move that client through the process quicker, you can basically decide how you want to fill up the additional productivity time you have. It might be additional clients. It might be on the buy side, might be on the sales side, might be more marketing, but it's freeing up time. It also allows you to get more sticky with those clients. So how do you basically make sure that that client isn't using additional agents in a large geography? Most agents have a kind of a limited range on the map of where they really feel comfortable. They know area well enough where they can sit in an office with their client and talk about it. But if you have a tool like ours that also delivers deep knowledge on neighborhoods in an expanded geography, you can now increase your geographic reach, which increases your client fee base. So instead of losing that client to another agent, who, you know, I'm down in San Jose and my client wants to look at properties up in San Bruno, the odds of me knowing anything about it are low. What often happens is the client uses you down in San Jose and they use somebody else up in San Bruno. Well, I don't want to give that up as an agent. I don't want to refer somebody out either and just get a referral fee. I want to own that client. I can do that through pulling up on my iPad or my computer all the neighborhood data I need and the city data I need to basically say, okay, I know enough. I can advise this client. These are the neighborhoods they should be looking at. Maybe I'll just send them up there. I don't have to escort them. They can drive around on a weekend. But basically, by expanding agents' geographic reach, you give them kind of new avenues to increase their revenues. We've spoken with agents about this, both in Dallas-Fort Worth and the Bay Area. It seems to resonate. We think working with a couple firms, if we can put some pilots in place, we can roll that out by hopefully mid-year, maybe the fall.
I asked Brian how he sees the competition for Localife.
Competition is interesting because there's two different categories. You almost have to think about maybe a little bit more about what we do and our approach. So Localife, we come at this from two levels. Traditional search comes at it from a level of what's your geography that you want to be in, what's your price range, beds, baths, square footage, pool, fireplace. You know, you can pick the typical building features. That's traditional search. We have a piece of that, but again, like I said, we come at this on two levels. So our scoring methodology starts from a premise that people want to live in healthy, sustainable communities when given a choice and where price permits. So before any user starts a search, we've already scored every neighborhood and available property in a market, and in this case, the Dallas-Fort Worth market, and applied a Localife score. So you can skip all the other user inputs and just do geography and building features. And then you're just looking at properties and neighborhoods based on our criteria, and you'll see a list of relevant properties and neighborhoods for you. And those are pushed to the top, you know, the ones that are at the top. It's based on influences that support healthy, sustainable communities. The next step allows a user to tell us their lifestyle. Are they a couple, a family with kids, empty nester, retired, et cetera? And we're using that to determine what stage of life the user is in. We're not asking about age or income level or things like that. It's just a kind of a quick classification. And then we provide a list of options that reflects user priorities in the communities around them. Anything from schools to culture, citizen engagement, food, shopping, quiet, safety, health, could be education levels, parks and recreation. We offer up a range of ways for a user to describe the right location for them. And then based on that, our platform takes our original list of properties and neighborhoods that, you know, Localife generates based on our own criteria. And we recalculate that and deliver back a modified list that's customized. We say personalized for the user, ranked top to bottom. So on the competitor side, you've got the big listing sites, again, taking that traditional approach. And that traditional approach works for them. They benefit by users clicking on as many listings as possible, because that's the traffic that helps them make money, because their business model is driven by agent marketing and lead generation. So more clicks, the better. They're not incented to narrow the funnel. Well, we want traffic to our site. Our mission is to reduce clicks and get users to the right property faster. We don't charge agents for impressions on our site or clicks. Narrowing the funnel is one of our key goals. When we look at potential competitor companies that aren't traditional listing sites or data aggregators, this field is more focused on data-driven personalization, and they're mostly startups, just because it's a fairly new area. Many have different business models. Some are geared more towards marketing solutions for agents. There's one out there with a rental platform. By the way, we do rentals as well as buy side. We're both a for sale and a for rent platform. Where they have scoring solutions, these competitor companies that are startups, these seem to be much more driven by point of interest and mobility. So what's around that apartment or home in terms of things that you said was important, whether it's restaurants, grocery shopping, schools, churches, those sorts of things. And is it walkable or not? There's relatively little focus on community factors, and some aren't consumer facing at all, some of these sites. So we think the area of personalization for property search is at very early stages. Again, that's probably why most of you see startups doing this. It's early days, and I think there's a lot of room to run for all of these companies, including us, and it'll be interesting to see how it develops.
I asked Brian how he sees the space evolving over the next 5 years.
Yeah, I think personalization is just going to continue. Think about online shopping and think about the internet. So with the advent of the internet and really online shopping, there's been a trend for almost 20 years now for greater customization and personalization in the online consumer space for just general shopping. And, Amazon knows so much about you. If you have a regular account with Amazon and you shop with them, they know so much about you already, but that's just going to keep getting better and better. And in the shopping space, those companies are way out ahead of real estate. There's so much going on in marketing, psychographics and the like that we're just scratching the surface on in real estate. I think you're going to continue to see residential real estate marching along in that direction, getting better and better through maybe a standalone platforms, maybe not. Is there a role for standalone real estate? We're still standalone real estate search in 5 years? Yeah. 10 to 15 years? I don't know. I don't know that you'll see in residential real estate, I don't know that you'll see a differentiation between real estate agents and mortgage agents. If you look at commercial, they're under one platform in the big companies. If you look at what Zillow and Opendoor are doing, they're pulling more and more services inside their platforms. Opendoor started off as an iBuyer. Zillow started off as a traditional listing site, but it's now betting its future on becoming an iBuyer, not on real estate search. So I think that real estate search itself in the midterm still stands alone. It gets more and more personalized, becomes much more consumer friendly in terms of how it's used, becomes much more voice activated and has the ability to follow you around and kind of know what you care about. But if you get further out, 10 years, I don't know that real estate search as a platform alone is still standing there. So what does that mean for local life? Does it mean we're not here? No, it just means local life itself will grow in different ways. So we think of residential real estate. I mentioned, start going to agents, then going to property management. It comes down to what kind of services are you now offering to the people who are delivering services onto their clients? And we're just scratching the surface on residential and have a ways to go. But the methodology that we've developed, the approach, can be applied in different real estate verticals as well. So kind of think about where we're at with hotels and leisures and Airbnb. One of the big struggles I have, I use Airbnb all the time. One of the biggest struggles I have is knowing something about the places I'm, the areas around the places I'm looking at. And the same with hotels. It's not transparent. I have to go to different sites. And whether I'm traveling for business or for pleasure, I still have certain things that I want around me in those neighborhoods, in those areas. And it's not always about the closest hotel or the closest Airbnb to the conference room that I have to go sit in for the next, you know, 2 or 3 days for meetings. I think there's an expansion where tools like this become much broader and not just focused on one vertical. And then I think, you know, ultimately they either become part of other platforms or they develop other products that make their tools kind of much more of an umbrella. So maybe it's some broader data tool that's not just about search, but it's about the data services you're providing to the people who then deliver services to their clients.
Great to connect with Brian McAllister of Local Life today. Local Life's mission is property search based on how you experience life. Everything Local Life does is geared to finding that personal fit for buyers and renters either directly or by enabling real estate professionals to get their clients in the right properties faster. It's about saving time and getting better results. And that concludes our show. I'm excited to follow Brian and Local Life's pursuit to build the ultimate personalized search for homebuyers. Find out more about Brian and Local Life in the show notes. Please subscribe to The Real Estate Innovators and write a review wherever you subscribe to podcasts, which helps us grow our audience. Find out more about The Real Estate Innovators at therealestateinnovators.com. Until next time, innovators.